You're listening to the Yale Founder Series, your source for inspiration and insights into the vast world of entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Daniel Johnson, and we interview founders, CEOs, and world changers to get a better grasp of what it truly means to be a founder. Taking preconceived ideas into mind-boggling realities. But there's so much more than a podcast, it's a community. We empower startups with law, accounting, consulting, and more. So tune into the end of this episode. It's going to involve with our partners, resources, and YFS as a whole.
Reed Switzer is the founder of Hopscotch, a payment platform that aims to make payment and transaction systems more efficient for small businesses and freelancers. He was first introduced to the business world as a high school student, and his interest landed him in the Wharton School, where he eventually dropped out to pursue and focus on building an idea he developed for a new type of payment system for small vendors, which would become Hopscotch. In this episode, Switzer joins us to discuss his path to creating Hopscotch, from his initial decision to drop out of college to build a startup, to the fundraising process that would bring Hopscotch to life. He shares with us ideas on the importance of knowing your product, and ultimately what he envisions Hopscotch to be as he continues down on his entrepreneurial path.
How are you doing?
I am good. I'm doing well. Enjoying the fall weather. There, staying busy. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to chat about whatever. Was excited to, you know, obviously be invited to join. I got to check out some of the other episodes for sure. But
yeah,
would love to. Happy to dig into whatever.
Perfect. Let's do it.
Okay. So after doing some research, we saw that you dropped out of Wharton. How did you know that it was like the right time to drop out, and how did that come about?
To be honest with you, I was sort of lucky in the sense that, you know, COVID made it a little bit easier to come to the decision. Mm-hmm. But I had been working on Hopscotch for a while before I actually, you know, dropped out. So the idea went through a few iterations. I ultimately ended up building a board of advisors with, you know, varying experiences in different industries, and, you know, really relied on them to help sort of refine what the idea was and whether or not it had legs. And so it wasn't until, you know, a few months of working with that advisory group and, you know, chatting with small business owners that I really started to see that the idea had legs. And, you know, frankly, I had never thought about dropping out, or I never thought I was actually going to do it. I had thought about it, but, you know, never thought that there would be a moment where it would come. And it wasn't until a couple of the advisors really started, you know, pushing on it and saying, hey, like, this has legs, like, you should go do it. Yeah. And, you know, given everything was remote for classes, I was like, hey, look, we have this initial idea. We're getting support. You know, everyone's taking classes online. Let's me take a semester off, focus on building the business, and if it happens, it's going to happen now. Mm-hmm. And so I made that bet, and, you know, of course, we ultimately did raise our initial round of funding. We're able to put the team together, and you know, after that, it was all in.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned an interesting thing that at the time you said your advisors were pushing you to ultimately drop out, take a semester off, but you didn't mention funding until maybe later. So I know the biggest question asked, I know COVID's made, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs, to made a lot of careers in general, but, you know, what kind of was the ultimate motivator to say that, you know, the time is now? Was it just because you had not much else going on? Were you, you know, stuck at home, or kind of what, like, was it the trust of those advisors that let you do that?
Well, I think it was part of it was just like the development of the idea, right? Mm-hmm. Like the idea was becoming more and more refined. We were getting more data points, and the funny thing is I always said we when I was talking to people about the business, but it was really just me, and for whatever reason, that gave me like comfort, like it's a movement. Mm-hmm. But it was really how refined the idea was becoming. And like we were getting great feedback from, you know, business owners, and that was validating enough for me to like really invest, you know, time in taking it to that next, you know, level. Mm-hmm. And I think also it was part of it was that when I was sitting in the classroom, or in this case, the virtual classroom, all I could really think about and, you know, all I could really focus on was building the business, right? Nothing else really mattered to me. And so at that point, it also just became like, it's not worth it, right? It's not worth the investment to pay for classes and stuff if I'm not going to be, you know, giving it my all. And so I never really thought at that point that it wasn't going to happen. I thought it was always just a matter of time. And like the idea was legitimate enough to where if it wasn't me who pursued it and made it happen, someone else was going to do it. Right. And someone else maybe with more connections, more, you know, of a background in, you know, fintech, so on and so forth. So the confidence in the idea also made me feel like, hey, now is the time to really, you know, invest in building it.
Okay. And on the topic of investment, how did you get your investors to take a chance on you?
Yeah, I love that question. The million-dollar question. So it was a process. I think, you know, you'll read things about, you know, building a venture-backed business where it's all, hey, you need to get an introduction to this investor from, you know, a founder that they've backed in the past, or, you know, it has to be a warm intro is what you'll see thrown around a lot. And actually, I think that's not the case, right? The fact of the matter is that there are so many really talented people out there that don't have the network within the venture capital world, that don't have the background that, you know, VCs would consider to be, you know, investable. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that is most important is to build relationships, to put yourself out there, to send emails, to, you know, really sort of like be a salesperson and just hound, you know, all of the founders, all of the investors, advisors, you know, people in the space that you're trying to pursue and chat with them. And I think what you'll find is that when you engage with them in a way where it's not like, hey, I need money to build this, and more so, hey, I'm thinking about this idea, I'd love to get support, get your perspective on it, so on and so forth. People are really, you know, happy to engage and take the time to help you build, you know, that idea. And when you start building these relationships, you now are able to actually tap into them and leverage their networks to then meet investors and people who will give you money. Yeah. And that was a lesson that took me a few months to learn when I first started fundraising. You know, I probably got close to 100 no's throughout a 6-7 month process. But towards the end of it, what really flipped is that I started using these conversations with VCs and other folks as an opportunity to build that relationship. And the relationship is what leads to being invested in, less so than, you know, a really great idea.
Yeah, and then, you know, just to mention, right, VC, of course, is all about relationships. That's how everyone gets funding. But you mentioned, you know, getting 100 no's up until finally pushing through. I mean, talk to me a bit about the business side of, you know, Hopscotch as well. I mean, did you ultimately think that it was the relationships you were building with those, you know, investors who took that first chance on you as more of them trusting and believing in you, or maybe more the company?
So I think it was more, I don't want to say it was more me. Like, it definitely, the founder always is going to have a part to play within the fundraising process. The idea is always going to have a part to play within the fundraising process. But the most important thing beyond the actual individual and beyond the business idea is traction. Are you consistently showing that you are actually doing what you said you were going to do, right? Because at the end of the day, what separates those who, you know, win in the long run from those who don't is just consistent execution over a really long period of time. Because building a business is tough. It is by far the hardest thing in the world. And, you know, there are a lot of founders who really don't talk about the struggles that they encounter, you know, through their journeys. And a lot of the companies that we know and love today were, you know, days away from dying in the early days. And so if you can prove to an investor that, hey, like, you chat with them month one, you say, hey, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z over the next 6 months. You send out progress updates, you know, keep them up, you know, in the loop, maybe set up calls here and there. And as you actually, as the time goes by, you actually show that you are doing what you said you're going to do. That builds more trust than anything. And will help you get that first check.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then talk to me a bit about then that kind of, you know, intermediary period as well. I mean, did you drop out first and then you were trying to raise after, I'd assume?
Yes, essentially. So, I started the raising process a little bit before I dropped out, but then...
Okay, yeah. So how was that then gap, you know, dropping out, maybe a little few people calling you, a little bit crazy, but, you know, you're sold on this idea. And you know, keep hearing no's, that kind of persistency. I mean, what kind of pushed you through all that? I think a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs go through this ultimate cycle of, you know, being excited for a new idea, you know, realizing that takes a lot more work and a lot more diligence, and then they oftentimes quit. So
yeah,
was it you holding on to maybe the vision, or what kind of pursued you through that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it was the vision. I mean, for me, also, the problem was personal. It was something that I had, you know, experienced when I was working at a startup prior, and then when I was running, you know, a clothing business in the past. Honestly, like in hindsight, I almost think every founder should go, especially first-time founders, should go through a long period of just pure rejection. Just everyone pointing out all of the holes in the idea. Yeah. Because, like, once you do get funding, that's when all of the real, like, challenges start. And so if you can't get through that, you know, initial funding period of people poking holes in your idea and like saying it's never going to work, it's going to be really challenging to get through those first 3-4 years of really trying to find product market fit, because your customers are going to be a lot more critical of you and your idea than the investors are when you're just pitching them with a pitch deck and don't actually have a product. But again, what made me believe in what, you know, I was setting out to build and what the team is building today is the fact that I think it's a novel idea, right? Like, Hopscotch is a payment platform that lets businesses pay and get paid in real time with zero fees. Why should businesses have to wait or pay to access money they've already earned? And so there's something really like tangible about that, and something that is easy for folks to understand. And we saw that with the small businesses we spoke with. And so again, I think it was really, to me, just a matter of time before someone built it. And, you know, in a lot of the VC conversations that I had, it wasn't so much as like, this idea won't work for X, Y, and Z reason, and more so, it's just too early, like, prove to us that you can actually go and do this.
And so, like, get to the heights of where you are with right now at Hopscotch. Like you said, you went through different obstacles, and there was a lot of persistence in that process. What was, like, the biggest obstacle in your life that helped you for, like, those moments that prepared you to overcome them?
That is a great question. I don't know if there was, to be honest with you. Like, failing a test, maybe? I think, like, there's moments in life where like there's challenges, right? Like obviously there's a challenge where like maybe you go through a breakup, right? That sucks. Or again, you fail a test or you lose a family member or something that, you know, really hits deep, right? And losing a family member is a lot more tough than, you know, the latter two. But the point being is that you have these challenges, you know, as you go through. And so I think they're all different in some way, shape, or form, but I think you build calluses, you know, over time as you experience them. And, you know, when you're building a company, right, that's very different from the experiences that, in fact, a lot of people have, you know, prior. And this is why investing in first-time founders is so difficult as an investor, because there's just so many things that person doesn't know. And those things that they don't know don't really translate well to, in my mind, things that they may have experienced in the past. And so, grit. And having had challenges, no matter what they were, I think, you know, lead to someone being successful. For me personally, I think that, like, you know, there's things that, you know, that I did have to go through, and I'm not going to chat about on, you know, the podcast, that weren't as fun. And, you know, just sort of building that mental toughness over time is what's helped. But again, like, there's definitely been times, and I've said this, where like, you know, I question like whether or not, you know, building Hopscotch is, you know, it gets tough. Like there are things that have really, really been difficult. And just being able to push through every time has helped me get stronger and better, you know, as a leader. And really what it came down to was our customers and being able to support them and see the real results that we have, impact that we have on their business. And then more importantly, the team. Right? Like you have a team that believes, that's literally joining you to build something out of nothing. And like, that's powerful. And so that's helped me as well.
Talk to me a little bit more about the team. I mean, I know you mentioned in the beginning, right? Talking about Hopscotch, you said it's actually, you use the word we, but it is actually you, right? So, you know, did you make the decision to make the team, you know, after getting funding? And I guess even before you had the team, was there maybe even a personal team behind you, maybe that was friends or family kind of, you know, supporting you maybe through the other side as well, building it.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom and my dad were sort of my sounding boards early on, and they even helped me write, you know, a few of the early emails, you know, out to people. You know, so they did a great job there. In terms of, like, the team, like, I always knew I wanted to build a team. Like, in the early days, the advisory group was my team, right? And, like, can ask them questions. They lent me credibility just by being associated with what we were looking to build. And then, you know, over time, like, I think, like, once we did receive funding, you know, I'm a non-technical founder, so I had sort of the disadvantage of not being able to build an early prototype of the product myself. And so the way that I compensated for that is I had experience, you know, designing in Figma, and so I was able to actually bring the idea to life through those designs. And that's sort of what the early prototype was, enabled me to collect feedback from users and enabled me to tell the vision or to share the vision in a visual way, which is often the easiest way for people to really grasp it. And so I guess the answer to your question is, like, with the team, we were lucky enough to recruit really great talent from Capital One, Better Mortgage, Daily Pay, Google, so on and so forth, like really talented people that have built companies from zero to one and have, you know, led really high performing teams. And so I was able to actually rely on those folks to help, you know, take this to the next level. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, that definitely carries on. Yeah.
Great. Solid.
So with your team, like, as the founder and the CEO, how did you decide who would be part of your team and, like, how they aligned with your values and mission for Hopscotch?
Yeah. So for me, it was more, we're actually going through this right now as we're looking to hire a director of growth. I think in the early days, I relied a lot on referrals. So I had never really interviewed people before Hopscotch. And so going into the interview process, I think I sort of knew what I was looking for in terms of the type of person, but didn't know the exact questions that I should be asking in terms of, like, whether or not this person is qualified to do, you know, that job. And so because of that, and because I recognized that myself before actually going through the hiring process, I put a lot of weight in referrals that we received from, you know, our advisors, right, and people they've worked with in the past, and our investors and people that they think highly of. And that worked out quite well for us because we were able to recruit people to the business that we knew were going to be able to do the job that we needed them to do, but were also highly respected, right? And then we were able to leverage their network to be able to recruit other people to the business. And in fact, our first, you know, few hires were actually from making one hire, who then introduced us to friends that they've worked with in the past, bringing them on board, and it sort of snowballed from there. Now it's very different. Now I like to ask, you know, I like to really do the first screening call for all of our new hires and just sort of talk to them about things sort of unrelated to business. See whether, you know, how eloquent they may be, see sort of what they're passionate about. And sometimes I even try to dissuade someone from joining an early stage startup. And it's funny to watch, like, them actually sort of take a step back and be like, oh, is this actually really for me? Yeah. And the people who actually take a step forward then and say, this is what I want to do and this is why, and have good sound reasoning behind it, you know that they're going to be the ones who are by your side when the going gets tough. And so I like throwing that at people because it's like, why apply for a business and then have the hiring manager say, why are you doing this? It may not be what you're looking for. So
yeah. And then, you know, you're kind of talking about, you know, your team, you know, early stage fundraising, but, you know, even just on kind of Hopscotch in general, on a technical term, you know, ultimately I've seen it's been, you know, positive to kind of Venmo, you know, for businesses on steroids, right? So in terms of, you know, the early stages of fundraising and team, how did you guys kind of, you know, you talk about product market fit as a very important emphasis, especially when, you know, you're going to the early stages of your company. How did you guys, you know, tackle that from a technical aspect?
Yeah, and I think we still are. I think really the key is, like, being quick. the key is being a good investigator, and I try to, like, really instill this in the team members, and it's something that we're still trying to get better and better at.
Yeah.
But when you're building a product, like, your main job is to investigate, right? Like, is what you've built the right thing? If not, what's the feedback from users? Do you need to change a couple of things here and there to make it work? Or do you need to scrap the whole thing and make, you know, pivot to something else? And the same goes for your market. Maybe you built something really, really great for, you know, one customer profile, but the problem is that you've spent all of your time and effort acquiring the wrong customer profile that's currently using it, and so the feedback is misleading. And so being a good investigator, I think, is the key to finding product market fit. For some people, it takes, you know, a couple of days, maybe it takes a month. And then for other businesses that have gone on to do extremely well, maybe it takes a few years to really figure stuff out. And so, you know, part of it is really just being consistent and trying to get to the root of, like, why people like the product or why they don't like the product, and using that information to be really, really quick in how you iterate on the product and ship changes.
So to make all this magic happen, like, as an investigator, what do you do in your day-to-day specifically?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of it is, and it's changed from the start, right? Early on, it was just conversation after conversation with small business owner to really figure things out. It was also doing a lot of research just on, like, what are other people doing? You know, what do we think they're doing well? What are they doing not so well? And a lot of that, you know, has continued, but not with the same level of intensity. So, you know, every week reaching out to, you know, a subset of our Hopscotch members, asking them for feedback on the product. You know, if I'm seeing a user who usually comes in, you know, a week to do a certain action, and then 3 weeks go by where they haven't done that, I reach out personally and just say, hey, like, you know, I realize you haven't been back or whatever it is. Like, is there any reason for that? And, you know, sometimes even give out my personal number to users and just have, like, a texting relationship to get feedback from them. So I do a lot of that. I also rely on my team a lot to be the investigators and, like, you know, manage support requests and see, like, what people are asking for, what problems they're having. Our head of product, Tom, does a great job at, you know, really being data-driven and, you know, making sure that the decisions we're making are based on, like, actual feedback. Yeah, I'd say talking to people is really my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, it sounds amazing, especially the feedback, like, you have with, you know, your customers and the team funding. Where do you kind of help Scotch going, you know, from now and in the future? I mean, ultimately, you made a, you know, big decision, right, in Wharton to drop out, and you seem, of course, very happy with it. But, you know, what would be the ultimate kind of dream to fulfill, maybe the vision you had when you initially made the decision to go all in on this?
I mean, really, it's just to be able to support as many small businesses as possible is the mission. And, you know, people have asked, why did we name the company Hopscotch? And why do we invest in branding? And one of the answers is, like, you know, B2B payments is a very traditionally unsexy space, which I think I've mentioned in the past. And, you know, a lot of the tools that have been out there today that are used widely have been around for the last two decades. And so as millennials and Gen Zers step into the workforce, I think they want something that's a little bit more in line with the experiences they have today in their personal lives. Mm. And so part of that, again, is like needing a brand that feels different, that looks a little bit different, which is why we chose yellow as our brand color, which is typically the big no-no in branding. And then for the name, Hopscotch, right? Like, if you are building a business, you're jumping from point to point, trying to reach this end goal. Mm. And like a hopscotch board, you know, where you jump from square to square, we want to be the vehicle to get small business owners from point A to point Z in their journey.
I like that. That's definitely a, you know, a great name to it. And then, you know, finally, we always like to kind of harpoon back on the aspect of student entrepreneurship. So, you know, you being a student yourself and kind of making the decision to go all in, we've heard different answers in terms of some founders saying, you know, ultimately, tap industry experience and, you know, the opportunity will come for you, versus others saying forge an opportunity. So I know you definitely forged it in your own way. So where would you kind of stand on maybe your advice to other students in the same?
And just to clarify, so this is like when they're looking like what to do or what to build, or?
Yeah, like if, you know, someone has an idea, say they're just kind of stuck on the biggest point of, do I go all in on this, or do I maybe wait to feel more experienced, more older, or maybe just wait for something to, you know, make this seem more attainable with less risk, I would say.
Yeah. So everything is always going to be risky. There's never going to be the right time to do something. starting a business, making decisions when you're running that business, it's never the right time. And that's something, again, that I took a while to learn. And one of my investors has really tried to instill that, you know, in me. It's like, there's not going to be a good time. You just got to do it. And so, like, I would say that, right? If you are passionate about something, right, and you're a younger person in college, I would presume, just given where we're at, that you should take the jump, right? School's always, and this is not advocating for someone to leave school, right? But like, yeah. School's always there. There's always going to be opportunities, right? If you're passionate about something, the only regret you're going to have down the line is that you didn't actually make that jump. Mm-hmm. And I think it's always funny because you hear people say, especially like, you know, mostly like older, you know, adults, so on and so forth, or maybe it's your parents when you're watching TV and you see a commercial for something, like, oh, I had that idea like 15 years ago, but I just didn't do it. Right? Yeah. At least my mom always says that. And so, like, you know, that's a regret. And if you actually go and try, no one can take that away from you. And I think if you're concerned about what other people might say, you shouldn't be, because, you know, you know, as long as you can execute on it and really, you know, give it your all, that's all that matters.
Wow. The courage you have is really impressive, and that's why you're the founder and CEO. So I have a question. So, like, what books or possibly any podcasts would you recommend?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of great VC books. I haven't read as many of the VC books, to be honest. I tend to like podcasts more, just like as I'm traveling and stuff like that. It's just easier to do. There are a few. Bear with me. I would say actually newsletters is one of them.
Okay.
So, Lenny's newsletter is great. If you're like, I think the stuff that he has is awesome. And, you know, I use it as a resource to try and, like, you know, understand, like, what was it like in the early days of building HubSpot, right? And they have, like, great, unique data that you're not going to find anywhere else. Or, like, how do you find product market fit, right? So they have a bunch of articles there. I think VCs are a really underutilized resource, right, where so many of them who are specialists in a certain space publish these blog posts and articles about, like, essentially market maps. And then they'll actually, like, talk about specific companies within the market map, what they like that they're doing, what they don't like, maybe some data here and there. So I think that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. The great one that does that, I mean, Bain Capital Ventures has a ton of stuff. There's also Battery Ventures that does a bunch of great, you know, work, Headline Ventures. And then there's a company called Contrary Research. Well, I mean, it's a VC. Contrary is a venture capital firm, but they started this thing called Contrary Research, where they actually publish these really detailed white papers on, you know, businesses, startups, and it digs into every nook and cranny of that business's journey. And I think they're probably one of the best right now in terms of giving people an inside look at what it's like to build a business and why that business made certain decisions along their journey. So I would recommend checking that out. And then on podcasts, like, I'd say like 20 Minute VC with...
Harry?
Yeah. Harry's great. I think there's a lot of really awesome pieces of information there. Mm-hmm. And then Ripple Ventures has one too, which is pretty solid. So,
thank you for all the gems. How can our listeners stay engaged with what Hopscotch is moving forward to, or like any developments that Hopscotch has? How can we stay informed?
Yeah, so definitely follow us on LinkedIn. Little bit of a plug there. So we're at Try Hopscotch. And then, you know, also follow me personally at Reed Schweitzer. We post on IG too, same username, Try Hopscotch. And then if you ever want to chat about like anything, my inbox is always open. It's just Reed, R-E-E-D, at gohopscotch.com. So feel free to shoot me a note. And if you're a freelancer or building a small business out there, sign up for the platform. There's a code 20 off for our pro plan for anyone listening today.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank
Love that.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, pleasure chatting with you. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to cover, but really enjoyed this.
No, you know, we did as well. And I'll definitely be in touch about, you know, future synergies and episodes out and all that. So cool. Thank you so much for coming on today.
It was really nice getting to meet you. Thank you.
Likewise. Take care. Bye.
Hey, y'all. Sean here with a quick sign-off. Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Yale Founder Series. If you're a founder, entrepreneur, or world changer of any sort, be sure to check out some of our partners to accelerate your business ventures. Whether it's consultation with Adventist Law, bookkeeping and ideation with Mighty Startup, accounting or advisory with AKM Global, or even tax help with Heartbeat and Partners, YFS will continue to build and support the strong community of student founders and entrepreneurs. So make sure you tap into YFS Pod on IG, and with our partners, Speaker Network, continue to grow and accelerate your ventures. Peace.